Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Joy Powers. Mother's Day is Sunday, and while it's a time where we traditionally give thought to the influence our own mothers have had on our lives, a UW-Milwaukee researcher is studying the broader impact of motherhood.
Leslie Harris is an associate professor in the Department of Communication at UW-Milwaukee. She's also president of the Organization for Research on Women and Communication. She joins us in the studio to talk about how motherhood has shaped our society. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So what are the lenses through which motherhood shows up in your research?
Whenever you're looking at women in public culture and the ways in which women try to engage in public culture, you almost inevitably come across motherhood as a really important theme in things that you're seeing. So some people end up using motherhood as a resource for action. Sometimes motherhood is a necessary limitation to what people are doing. So why are you doing this if you're a mother? Or mothers can't do this sort of thing, or good mothers behave in this way. And sometimes motherhood is the site of things that people are trying to change.
Is motherhood ever used as kind of, to use a very modern term, street cred? I can do this because I am a mother, or these people can do this because they are mothers?
Yeah, there's a long history of women justifying public action because of motherhood. So even during the Revolutionary era in the United States, women's public identity was around this identity of mother, that they're supposed to raise good citizens in order to shape the new country. But then during the Civil War, women used motherhood as a justification for anti-slavery activism. Going into the 19th and 20th centuries, women have used motherhood as justification to act to prevent drunk driving, to reduce gun violence, all sorts of different public actions that might seem uncomfortable or even taboo become possible under this lens of motherhood. Because after all, what else are women supposed to do other than protect their kids?
Right. So I was going to ask, as I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking of famous mothers throughout history, and thinking about the role of the First Lady. And in a lot of ways, it feels like we might think of her sometimes as not just the wife of the president, but as the first mother.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Women sometimes, especially public women, become emblematic of what people are supposed to do in the way that they're supposed to behave. So sometimes we follow the First Lady's lead in things that are acceptable behaviors or good behaviors. But sometimes First Ladies become targets of criticism because they're in such a prominent public position.
At what point do women learn that motherhood might give them access to public discourse and influence in public policy in a way that other aspects to their womanhood do not?
I think there are a few parts of it. The first is that not all biological mothers it's not only biological mothers that use motherhood as a tool for action. So a lot of people, especially women, can draw on this idea of motherhood in order to justify public action. So some of the most famous people during their time were active kind of as mothers, even though they weren't biological mothers. So if we look into like the 1880s and 1890s, Frances Willard was the most famous woman of her time, incredibly influential, and she ran the largest political women's organization in the country, the Women's Christian Temperance Union. And she organized women around this banner of home protection. As mothers, women need to organize to protect their kids. And they even celebrated a Mother's Day in January during the winter in celebration of Frances Willard's own mother. So there, it's an example of women organizing even if they're around this idea of motherhood, even if they're not biological mothers. But right now, we see a lot of women who notice problems in the world a new way because of their connection to their own motherhood and their relationship with their own children. And even talking to a lot of women, they don't see themselves as particularly political, but they know or they see one of their primary jobs as particularly protecting their own kids and other people's kids. And that realization can become a moment of action for a lot of people.
This is the term that people have started using in the last 10, 15 years of the mama bear.
Yeah, and the mama bear, that language might be more recent, but it's an idea that has a really long history in the United States.
Well, so let's go back a long way, you know, more than 150 years here, because you have written about the role of motherhood as it pertains to anti-slavery activism. How was motherhood a factor in making a difference in changing attitudes towards slavery?
Well, a lot of women, especially women in the North, may not have felt personally connected to slavery. But for many of them, they felt there was something wrong and they needed some way to act and a tool for action and a justification to act in a world where women were not really supposed to be public and political. And so a lot of women organized around the idea of motherhood, and they can see a commonality between their motherhood and the motherhood of women who were enslaved, who were trying to be mothers and their children were taken away from them or they didn't have the capability to be good mothers because they were enslaved. And so women in the North, primarily white women in the North, drew on this idea of motherhood to unify people to act, but to also create a sense of empathy and identification with women who seemed so different than themselves.
And they did this through magazines, I guess?
Yeah, one really common form was gift books. So the Liberty Bell is one gift book where authors and nonfiction, fiction, poetry would all be assembled in a book that was ultimately sold in order to promote the anti-slavery cause. And these would be like coffee table books. And some were sold at a higher price, some were sold at a lower price, and it disseminated this message. Sometimes these same messages were also in pamphlets. It might have been in popular literature during the time, published in magazines or newspapers as well.
Of course, at this point, women do not have the vote. And so the hope is that the women, by being united, would influence the men in their lives?
Absolutely. So the vote is just one form of public engagement. And in some ways, it's really important, right? But women didn't have the right to vote until 1920, at least all across the United States. And so the ability to harness language and rhetoric to influence public opinion and to change the shape of the public conversation was incredibly important, especially since they didn't have that institutional resource. But even after the vote, women's public influence was very much tied to their ability to harness language and rhetoric and shape the ability for us to talk about something in very specific ways. And that can extend an individual's power beyond that just one vote that they have.
What were some of the other key examples along the way of how the power of motherhood and the rhetoric of motherhood made a difference in public policy?
So the Women's Christian Temperance Union is probably the most significant example. Now, this was in the 1880s and 1890s, the single largest women's organization in the United States and probably the rest of the world as well. And here, women organized under this banner of temperance, keeping alcohol out of the home. And ultimately, they pushed for the Prohibition Amendment. But their idea was that they needed to organize to protect the home because there was significant problems with domestic abuse. Women didn't have control of their own property or money in the home. And so they felt that focusing on this issue could help them become better mothers and protect the home. And so motherhood became an organizing mechanism during that movement. But it also came up in peace movements. So Julia Ward Howe, for example, established the first or one of the first Mother's Days for Peace, which was an organized movement to promote world peace, an anti-war organization, but specifically focusing on the role that mothers had in maintaining peace under this assumption that women are peaceful, they're loving, and if you can harness that love, then everybody can get along.
Did the rhetoric of motherhood ever come into conflict with other women's issues? I mean, I'm thinking about the Equal Rights Amendments.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about the rhetoric of motherhood, we have a set of cultural expectations, and those cultural expectations are both limiting and empowering. So the idea that mothers nurture and care for children, that they're loving, that they can do it all, that they can be in every place and do everything really well, those are all limitations that individual women have to grapple with, but also that people use in public culture to suggest that women shouldn't be doing certain things. So women running for public office are often asked, well, who's watching your kids? And of course, in the debate over the ERA, there was a significant debate about whether women really needed this Equal Rights Amendment because women should be different. They should be honored. They should be separate. And they should really be focused on their kids. So motherhood is always a double-edged sword.
Leslie Harris is an associate professor in the Department of Communication at UW-Milwaukee and president of the Organization for Research on Women and Communication. You can read more about her research on motherhood at wuwm.com.